This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Everybody, this is episode number 91 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Normally, we would spend a minute or two going over what fun things we did this past weekend, like if we watched the Super Bowl or we watched the Grammys. But I thought we would just dive into our extremely awesome guest that we have this week. She had a really, really big 2016, which capped off with her making her first ever Open Top 8 at Star City Games Open Knoxville. She is our friend, Emma Handy. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, of course.
I think it's safe to say that we love you.
I hope so. It'd be more complicated if you didn't and I was on your show.
That's very true. It'd just be like, we I don't even know what to say to that.
Well, I guess we're stuck interviewing this bitch. I didn't want to be the one to veto it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Mm-hmm. We've wanted you on the show for a really long time.
Yeah. Until recently, I always worked on Mondays, so it was kind of hard to know that I could be here in time to record with y'all.
It's funny, because when you posted the announcement that you weren't working at the game store anymore, I kind of felt like that girl who finds out that the boy she likes just broke up with his girlfriend, and, like, you don't want to make your move too fast. You want to, like, give it some time. So, like, I didn't want to be like, oh, sorry to hear about your job. Want to be on our show? I was like, let's give her a couple days before I leap on her and ask her to come on.
Oh, don't worry about it. Another local shop reached out like 20 minutes later and was like, hey, so, you know, we got a spot open. Leave me alone. I don't even like y'all that much. I don't hate y'all, but like, I ain't leaving this place because I want to work in a local game store around here, you know?
You've got your eye on bigger things,
I guess.
So for those who don't know, I want to ask you a couple of questions in case they don't know who you are. So when did you first get started playing Magic? What was your first set?
That's tough. I first started I learned the rules of Magic when Mirrodin, the original Mirrodin, like busted artifact lands. Mirrodin was the new thing. But I really started playing Magic competitively, or understanding, quote unquote, how to play Magic around New Phyrexia. Mm-hmm.
And what made you decide that you wanted to be competitive instead of just sort of being casual and more of a kitchen table player?
I was at a point in my life where I had most of my hobbies. The biggest hobby I had was music. And I was very successful, at least on a local level, in a band. And so it was hard for me to justify spending a lot of time on something or sinking my all into everything if I was effectively just lighting money on fire. As awful as that sounds, I didn't have the income for that. So I basically tried to make it to where Magic was self-sustaining, and that just kind of snowballed for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've had JD on the show, who's a mutual friend of ours, and she had mentioned that she just doesn't really enjoy fun events or like casual events. Like she said, she doesn't really pre-release, she doesn't really do game day, you know, unless she really only has fun. She really only has fun when she's being competitive. You know, can you do, you know, lower REL things, or are you like that as well?
I think it really varies. I think Magic is a lot of fun when everybody is on the same level of competitiveness, not necessarily as far as how good everybody is, but as far as everyone understanding, hey, we're at a competitive REL tournament, no takesies, backsies, these are the rules, or, hey, we're at the casual Commander League, we're all playing these dirtily 100 color decks, nobody bring red deck or Xur or whatever. I was just going to say Magic's fun when everyone is trying to do about the same level of competition, I guess.
Yeah, we've certainly talked about that on the show, and we call that the social contract. And, you know, we've had issues in the past when it comes to, like you said, like EDH and even Conspiracy, where, you know, you go into it thinking, I've never played this set before, we're going to have a really LOL good time, you know, and then there's that one person who's, like, read the spoilers months in advance, knows exactly what they want to draft, and you're like, we just weren't on the same page here. So I really love that you said that and that you expanded that to be across all formats and all kinds of games.
Yeah, that's, and sometimes you'll have sort of unfortunate situations at, even at open, sometimes in the early rounds, I'll play against people where it's, say, their first or second open, and they're kind of just coming to have a good time with whatever brew it is they have, and I've lost to a couple of those people, but for the most part, the lack of discipline on their part kind of shows a bit, and it ends up just not being a very fun time. Either they make a slight misstep and want to take it back, or, you know, something goes wrong and things don't work how they thought they did, and that's pretty unfortunate when that happens.
You seem like you're really good at being able to read people. Like, one of the things I really like about you, and specifically watching you on coverage, is that you seem to do a really good job tailoring yourself to your opponent, which we've also talked about on the show, where if you feel like, you know, if you sense that your opponent is a little more laid back, I've watched you kind of lighten up as well in terms of, like, your body language and your play style. And that's not to say that you're playing badly or anything, but, you know, I've also noticed that when you're playing somebody really spiky, I can see it in your face, and you seem to be a good judge of that sort of thing.
A lot of it is that I just kind of, I personally really like to get distracted and have fun playing Magic, even in a tournament setting, but I kind of just read the table, I guess, or read the audience, to use more of a stand-up term. If someone is there and having more of a good time, or if the game is obviously over and we're kind of just going through the motions, almost like in chess when you know the game is over in 8 moves, but you're going to make them do it, or you're going to make them play it out. Like, I'm pretty inclined to just start joking around. Like, I was playing one of 2 winning ends for top 8 at a recent open, and my opponent, I just had a bunch of creatures, had missed a bunch of land drops. Opponent casts a Glimmer of Genius and just goes top, top in game 3, and I know I'm screwed if they have a sweeper. So I just smile and say, well, I guess I'm just going to go fuck myself then. And we got a pretty good laugh out of that.
Now, you've had a ridiculous year. I mean, you went from writing and Gathering Magic, blogging on your own first, and then Gathering Magic, Star City Games, 2,700 followers on Twitter. You just started streaming. You've already cracked 1,000 followers. You know, I've heard your name bandied about a whole lot. You know, we talk about the ride and sort of what it's like to go from nobody knowing who you are to instant visibility. How do you deal with that? Because you seem like you've kept a really level head about it.
It's really tough to be 100% honest, but it helps that before I was somebody in Magic, I was like a D-minus list somebody in another card game. And I used to play Yu-Gi-Oh! And was kind of one of the trade gurus of the game or whatever. I wrote a lot about it and, like, was known at least on a regional level when I would go to bigger tournaments, and it was pretty easy to transition into Magic doing the same thing. And a lot of it is just, I don't know, I guess a lot of it just kind of comes natural to me. There's a point where if you're just realistic with other people and you don't let it go to your head, then you're, I don't know, I guess it's just easier. There's not too much to explain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the questions we always ask a lady guests we have on the show is, what has your experience been like as a woman in Magic?
A lot different than when I played Magic before I transitioned to female. literal first sanctioned tournament I played presenting as female with a female name and everything was at a Modern Open. I played against an Adnos player. I was on Tarmo Twin, and my significant other and I share cards, and we have a pretty great looking collection. And but they lean over to their friend as they're walking behind me, going to the table, and go, oh, it's a chick. I'll be done pretty quickly. Mm. And I've never been so happy to, you know, not to, like, brag or whatever, but I go foil Scalding Tarn into foil Sign Breeding Pool into foil Serum Visions in my life. And then just 2-0 him.
Do you feel that, like, that's gotten better since you've become bigger? Because I definitely feel like, to some degree, there's a certain privilege that comes from being a woman who's good at the game. Like, I feel like women have a higher threshold to prove themselves, and that once they kind of do, you know, that behavior kind of goes away. Like, do you feel that's true?
Yeah, 100%. I think the default for when someone plays against a male competitor, unless the person is very good at the game, as in, say my opponent is very good at the game, then they are likely to assume that I am worse than them. But that is just a default. Whereas if they are a random and they play against a female, then it is more likely that they are going to assume they are more knowledgeable about the game than when I present it as male.
Mm.
I get talked over a lot more. I have judges not necessarily listen to me as often. it's pretty frustrating. And that changed a lot when I got my gig at SCG and everything. But before that, there was probably one incident per tournament related to me being female, be it someone making some smarmy remark, or like I had a guy who's like, oh, you're pretty good for a girl. And it's like, that is not a compliment. I don't.
That's a really interesting perspective. And if you ever, you know, were to decide to expand on it, I would certainly love to read more about it or even hear about it on another show. I think you really could, I really think you could go on for a while just about that subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I've started to write about it a couple times. It's just really hard to, I don't want to drag people who have been crummy to me, especially if they've learned since then. Obviously, I'm not trying to protect anybody necessarily, but it's an incredibly complicated dialogue, and I have not experienced, like, I guess what you're talking about is effectively like a Women in Magic article, and because there are so many things that I have not had to experience and will not have to experience, I don't want my voice to talk over those who have had to deal with those things, and I think that would be the case in a lot of scenarios because I have a much taller soapbox than most people.
And just to be clear, you know, I wasn't suggesting that, like, you drag anybody necessarily, and I certainly wasn't suggesting another Women in Magic article, although I wouldn't mind it. I was more specifically referring to your experience as a trans player who played before transitioning and played after transitioning. That's a really unique perspective that, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't play Magic very much before I transitioned, and I think I played at more of the kitchen table level. Most of my competitive experience has been post-transition, so I don't get to hear very often what that's like, especially what it's like to play sometimes the same people, you know, who've met you pre and post. And so that's what I was referring to in terms of being fascinating and being so unique. And, you know, if you ever felt comfortable enough to, you know, to kind of elaborate on that, I think you'd have a really big audience for that. Because there's a surprising number of, you know, I feel like we use the hashtag trans mafia. I feel like our numbers just keep growing.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that one. It feels like there's someone new every week. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
But it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So our woman of excellence this week is a young lady named Veronica Page. Veronica went 12-3 at Grand Prix Pittsburgh.
Booyah.
Hey. Booyah. 29th place. She was the winner of Play It Forward's Bounty, of which I donated a box of shadows to. She also receives 70 tickets from Magic Online and the opportunity to draft, have a mentorship with Sam Pardee, who's a fantastic Magic player. And she also got the amazing playmat, and Play It Forward seems like it's really doing good work. They've had a lot more pros come forward to offer their services to women and non-binary folks who are doing well, including the great John Finkel. There is a Grand Prix bounty out there. I don't know what specifically or which GP it's going to be for, but there is one lucky lady or one lucky non-binary person who's going to get the opportunity to be mentored by John Finkel. I mean, how great is that?
That'd yeah, be awesome. That's insane. I think it's the limited one for GP Vegas, isn't it?
It could be. I just caught the announcement the other day, and I was so busy streaming that I didn't quite catch the details. I just saw Finkel and mentorship, and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, same.
So if you get the opportunity, please look up Play It Forward. You know, they're always looking for donations. They are a nonprofit, and they seem like they're really, really doing some good work. So please support them. So there were two announcements that were made this past week. The first one I want to talk about is the Nationals announcement. So Helene Bergio wrote a post, and she basically said that there are going to be some changes happening on the World Magic Cup level. The first one is that they are getting rid of the World Magic Cup qualifiers altogether, and that they are going to be moving to Nationals. I wasn't around for Nationals. Were you all?
Nope. Mm-mm.
No.
That was like the very beginning of when I started playing.
Okay. It seems like as a whole, people were really stoked about this. They also announced that when it comes to the World Magic Cup, they started off with a 4-person team model, and they've since moved back down to a 3-person model. One of the most controversial changes I saw was that the World Magic Cup last year, they tried a team unified modern format, and it seems like it didn't come across the way they wanted it to. And so they've said that it's just going to be standard. There's not going to be a limited portion. It's just going to be standard. And they also now announced on the Grand Prix level that there's going to be a Sunday Pro Tour qualifier, like the old school PTQs that we know before PPTQs, that are going to be happening in lieu of the Super Sunday series, and that they're also getting rid of in-store Grand Prix trials, and that if you want to get buys for a GP, they're still going to have the GPTs on Friday as well. You know, what do you guys think about these announcements? Did they affect you at all?
I really liked the move for PTQs on Sunday instead of the Super Sunday series. I think it definitely gives people more to play for. I know some people who are eliminated at the end of day one of a GP don't always want to get up early for the Super Sunday series since they think, oh, you know, what exactly am I playing for? It's not always clear, or it's not always as desirable as, say, you know, going to the Pro Tour. And I think this will drive a lot more interest in something like that. And I don't know. I think it's definitely worthwhile. It's something that I would definitely do if I didn't make day two.
I think that the Nationals announcement got a lot of people excited who, you know, I always heard the stories like, oh, back when there was Nationals, we got to do blah, blah, blah. And so I think a lot of people who have played for a long time are really excited about Nationals. And while I have not played in a Nationals, like, I'm willing to see how it goes. I think that it's a kind of a good, I don't know, cookie. Like, it's like giving those people a cookie. Like, they get a thing that they wanted that they used to have. And I think that's, like, a good throwback. I'm also super excited about the PTQs on Sunday because the Super Sunday series was never my jam. Like, for judging, for playing in, for even, like, wanting to play in, I did not have a high desire. And I hope that maybe this will kind of drive PTQs to come back in another form, like where we can play in them all the time.
I agree. I'm excited about the prospect of Nationals because I was not playing when that was a thing. So that seems interesting to me. I agree with what Katie said. If PTQs on a Sunday at a Grand Prix are a thing, maybe because Wizards did indicate that they are listening to our feedback, that perhaps they would go back to a PTQ system, because I would actually really prefer that. I know there had been some talk about whether or not PTQs on a Sunday were worth it, or if they would have enough people or whatever it was. I'm not that knee deep into it to care as much as maybe other people, but it would be nice to have something else to do if I don't day two a GP, which seems to be the trend. So I guess something fun extra to do. And yeah, I've been so heavily focused on my Planeswalker points that maybe it would be cool to, like, do Nationals or something. I'd have to look at it more extensively.
I'm glad they did away with the Super Sunday series because it felt like it never really got coverage. So it was this almost, like, self-fulfilling prophecy to fail. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really cover it very well. There was a few years ago, your Magic Mike's co-host Ruben and his friend, I believe it was AJ Soccer, went and just kind of drug their own cameras up to Seattle and, you know, basically crowdfunded coverage for this because it literally wasn't going to get talked about. Mm-hmm. And them doing something more productive with that, if they're going to have the money go into something anyway, it's cooler that it goes to the Pro Tour. And it's something that isn't going to last all night like the Super Sunday series would. It felt awful to top four this 250-person event and get a box, a pat on the back, and then have to start your drive home at 11 p.m.
Yeah, I remember having to be that friend where, like, you get the, you know, your friend is doing well and they're like, guess what, guys, I'm top four. And you've got to put on that big smile of, like, this is great. When in reality, yeah, it's like you're tired, you're hungry, you have to pee, and now you've got to put on a big smile because your friend decided to top four this bitch, and now you're going to be here till midnight.
Exactly. I think Nationals sounds great, but I think it's all in execution. If it is just, instead of, if they basically do it as one WMCQ instead of the previous three, they just call it Nationals now and have some independent organizer host one event in the center of each country. That just sounds awful to me. Mm-hmm. It's just like WMCQs already require you to just basically spike a tournament or you get nothing. And if they just move that to one event, that sounds horrid. But if they do it before, where it was closer to something of like a GP as far as prestige and size and how it was organized, then that sounds really awesome. Having that narrative or being able to talk about someone being a national champion is really cool.
What do you think about the talk that, so Nationals is going to be all standard, as I understand it. The World Magic Cup is now going to be Team Unified Standard. It seems like there is this really aggressive push to standard. And of course, there were the accusations that this is the end of Modern, that Modern is now losing two more opportunities to be promoted on a higher level, on a bigger stage. You know, do you think there's any merit to that?
No. I'm just like, okay, I get what they're trying to do, because I even had this conversation at my LGS over the weekend, how I appreciate that they're trying to push people into playing standard, so they're offering different things, different events, but I really wish that I understand that eternal formats do not effectively make them money, but I wish that they would see that people just love those eternal formats so much. And while standard is their cash cow, and they definitely want people to buy a new product, I just really wish they could see just how important it is to some people. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people that even play Legacy and Vintage that would love to have more events that cater towards what they like to do, because especially if you don't have a lot of opportunities like near you. And I know we have like Eternal Weekend and things like that, but it'd be nice if it was something that was more consistent. So the second they said standard, I was like, boo, no.
Yeah, it definitely is a balancing act. You know, I get on the one, and ultimately they are a business and they're here to make money, and I completely understand that. But I also feel like on the other hand, you can't deny how big Modern is right now. I remember when SCG announced that they were getting rid of the Legacy Classics, there was a lot of talk of the numbers of how big were these formats, and Modern has just been consistently having huge opens. I remember the last two opens in Milwaukee, or even the last three opens, we have gotten bigger every single year. Mm-hmm. Modern is now leading to bigger opens than Standard. The Classics are bigger than Standard right now. Modern GPs are huge. I mean, Modern is Modern is a big format right now. And I think to completely ignore that is really kind of foolish in a way, because there is an audience there and they're very passionate for the format. And even if I certainly don't expect you to make every event Modern, but I do feel like there's got to be a happy medium between no Pro Tour, no Nationals, no World Magic Cup, and then, you know, everything. Like, there's got to be something there. And so I hope that they do take notice of that, and that maybe we get more something. I don't know what that something is, but more would be nice.
I think it's kind of tricky, because Modern is a very popular format, and I think because of that, it makes a great GP format, it makes a great open format, and it even makes a really great FNM format. Like, even at the local level, our Modern FNMs get more players than our Standard FNMs, because people are really excited to play the deck that they've been playing forever. And I think that's what makes Modern appeal more to, you know, casual players up through, you know, grinders. But I've heard a lot of people say, and, you know, JD even said this when we had her on the show last, that, you know, the pros don't enjoy Modern as much because the format isn't as easily breakable as Standard is. And it's a format that rewards a lot of repetition, and with one deck specifically. And I think it's really hard to find a great way to showcase it when there is that sort of that discrepancy, that, you know, this is a format that casual players and grinders love, but that pro players aren't as bullish on. You know what I mean?
I think you mentioning Grand Prix and Opens and everything is actually kind of what the happy medium that Aaron mentioned is, because I think that Modern is a horrible format for viewers. The decks are incredibly complicated. There are a lot of them. You have to know a lot of Magic cards to be able to follow what is going on, because the games are paced very quickly. Like, I think Pro Tours, Worlds, Nationals, those are things that Wizards is trying to market at basically the front page of Twitch. They just announced their big partnership. They're trying to get new people into the game with those particular events. They want, you know, 5 digits, 6 digits worth of people watching these things. And a deck like, not to rag on one of your favorites, Aaron, a deck like Ad Nauseam does not make for good coverage. That makes for people going, well, why is this person at negative 50 life and not dead? Okay, why did they win even though they had no cards in their deck and had to draw a card? it's a lot of the interactions are confusing if you don't already know what's going on. And I think that Grand Prix and Opens are better for the Magic players who love it. But I think for grabbing new players, which is what they want Pro Tours and Worlds to do, I don't think that Modern's very good for that. Even though, like, and don't get me wrong, Modern is literally my favorite format in Magic, but I think it is awful for newer players to try to watch it and stay interested.
That's a really good segue into another topic, which is GP Pittsburgh. And so I was looking at the top eight for the GP, and we had 5 copies of Black Green, 2 copies of Mardu Vehicles, and 1 copy of Jeskai Copycat. And, you know, there is still that criticism that Standard is really stale, that the bands didn't do what they were supposed to do. And it sounds like what you're saying, Emma, is that, you know, you mentioned that one of the downsides to Modern is that it's so diverse and that, you know, the average Magic player cannot possibly keep up with all of the decks. And so are you saying that this top eight that we see and that many people see as being stale, this is better for the viewer?
For the most part, that's correct. As people who actually say, people who read whatever website you read, be it Gathering Magic Channel, Fireball, Star City Games, TCG Player, whatever, we're the minority. We are not close. There are less of us than they are people who are newer to the game, and the only cards they ever see are what they buy out of booster packs and whatever they find at the Walmart or get for Christmas from their parents or whatever. So I think it is much better for them to go, oh, that thing made energy. I kind of get what's going on here. I know what the energy cards do. I opened a tune with Aether. I know what that is. Or, okay, it fell at our Guardian. I know what's going on here. And I mean, I guess that's a bad example because that Saheeli combo's the devil. But for the most part, people kind of understand. You can look and go, oh, this person is 3 creatures. This person is 1 creature. I get what's going on here. Or this person has a grip of cards and 15 life, and this person is 2 creatures and no cards in hand. I wonder who's winning this game. Like, you can figure it out by looking at it. Whereas I think Eternal formats are much harder for casual players to figure out. Like, we're probably going to watch most events either way, or at least our demographic are going to watch events because we want to watch an event and that's the only event on. Like, they have to diversify or point at the people who are only going to watch certain kinds of events and try to get as big of a market segment as they can that way.
Mm-hmm. So to put my tinfoil hat on for a little bit, do you think that this is intentional? Like, do you think from, like, maybe an R&D level or even deeper that this is the plan now? That, it, you know, Standard is sort of meant to be, you know, we've had those glory days, you know, Return to Ravnica Standard where you could literally play anything, where it was like there was Black Red Zombies, there was Abzan Reanimator, there was, you know, Sphinx's Revelation Control. You know, you really could do almost anything you wanted to do. And now we're looking at this very compact metagame of, like, the same 4 or 5 decks. Do you think that this is just the plan now that, you know, there's been a lot of talk of them forcing cards and, you know, making you have to play these cards because they're so good. You know, do you think that this is the plan now of purposely making these cards so that there are only 4 or 5 or 6 good decks instead of the, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 that we're used to in the past?
Like, I feel in the past 2 to 3 years, there's really been a big push in the storylines. And maybe that's just because I'm more aware of, like, what's actually going on in Magic than when I first started playing. But I feel like when they're trying to push storylines and push, like, hype cards, like, I don't remember when Return to Ravnica coming out, like, being super hype about, like, one card that a storyline, like, pivoted on. And now I feel like that's happening all the time. And so trying to push those cards and those, you know, special things that Wizards is trying to highlight is kind of forcing decks. And whether or not those cards are good, I feel like they want you to build around them. Like, that's the direction they're trying to lead you. And so if that card is bad, then, you know, you have to find a different card to be satisfied with. And maybe that card isn't as high of power level or whatever, but does something more efficiently or whatever it may be. And I feel like as Wizards continues to kind of go down the storyline route, I feel like that correlates a lot with what decks and Standard are going to be coming around, whether or not we like them. And so I think that, you know, R&D is kind of shaping us into 4 to 5 decks, and that's kind of what we get to play with for, you know, until the next set comes out, and hopefully it's a new 4 or 5 decks, but it'll probably just be building on the old decks that we have.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that concept. I do think Standard is stale, 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 and nope. even looking at the top eight of GP Pit, I'm like, cool. And then I go and compare it even to looking at, you know, the top eight from the last Modern Classic. I'm like, oh, you have a bunch of different decks here. There's maybe two of the same deck, but otherwise it's not the same, the same old bullshit. So I just, I'm just not about it. Like, I want to play standard because I want to play the standard deck that I made, and maybe that'll happen. But if, and me, and my store maybe is a bad example because we get very few standard players there. But so I would have to, you know, be like, okay, I'm going to bring my deck and play it at FNM versus playing it at a more competitive event. Because if I'm just going to play Mardu Vehicles and Black Rain, forget it.
Yeah, I'm looking through this top eight though, and I think the silver lining here is that even though these are clearly the top decks, it seems like the optimal builds for some of them aren't immediately apparent, or they're still sort of in flux. Like, I know we've kind of been ragging on Black Green, saying, oh, there's so much Black Green in this top eight, but, I see several different Black Green decks, and they all have really interesting pieces. Like, one of them is mostly energy-based with Long Tusk Cub and Glintsleeve Siphoner, which is a card that I think is really cool and have wanted to play with more. And then there's, you know, the deck that won is sort of what we would consider the standard black-green deck with, you know, the Rishkar, Gear Hulk, Walking Ballista, Winding Constrictor package, that core there. But then you see decks that are playing Gonti, and they're playing Ishkana, and they're trying to do different things. And I think, you know, even though it is sort of the same shell, putting in different pieces is going to, you know, it could change things. And I think, you know, I'm as someone who's, you know, a deck tuner, not necessarily a deck builder, those are the kinds of things that fascinate me, like trying to find the right couple of cards for your deck for a certain week. And I think it's cool that in that regard, the metagame isn't quite so settled, that we're still going to see little changes every week.
I don't know. I think it's pretty okay to have, like, a smaller number of decks, but I think a lot of that is kind of an R&D issue because of the change in rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They kind of changed that at the last second, and these sets are developed, you know, 2 years in advance. So I think a lot of the cards that are seeing play now, they did not expect to necessarily see play with other cards, or they didn't expect cards to bleed over with other ones.
Yeah, I think I lean more towards Chris's, you know, idea of, you know, Hallie was mentioning, well, there's lots of black green decks and they have different cards. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, well, you could play Eldrazi. You can play any kind of Eldrazi you want. You could play red blue Eldrazi. You could play black white Eldrazi. You could play white blue Eldrazi back when Eldrazi Winter was happening. And it's like, well, yeah, you can play whatever Eldrazi deck you want. Modern's incredibly diverse. And it's like, no.
Here's the catch. How do you want to play Tireless Tracker? That's the question.
Yeah.
That's a good one. So I want to talk about Eternal formats for a little bit and give ourselves a break from Standard. Emma, you and I streamed the Legacy Challenge the other day, and I haven't really seen you play a lot of Legacy. Did you have fun?
I loved it. I love my Legacy deck right now so much. That's actually what I'm writing about this week on Star City.
What did you play?
I played Blue-Red Prowess. It's sort of like a Blue-Red Delver. Well, everyone considers it a Blue-Red Delver deck, but it is much closer to just a Monastery Swift Spear Storm Chaser Mage deck than something with Stifle and Wasteland or anything like that.
Okay, and what made you decide to run? Because it sounds very lean. It sounds like there's not a lot of bells and whistles. A lot of the Delver decks tend to be doing a lot of things where it's like they're running Death Rites and this card and this card. And, like, we don't even really, if you go to look at, like, a metagame report, the Delver decks, nobody even really knows how to describe them anymore because they're just so damn busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just like, all right, let's just list every color that's in this Delver deck. And, you know, they can figure out what cards go in it, I guess. I don't, just click the deck list if you want to know that bad.
So what made you decide to play this sort of, like, leaner list? Like, what, you know, tell us about it.
I think that Price of Progress is very good right now. And I think I spent a lot of time playing Burn and Legacy. Not because of budgetary concerns or anything like that. I just think the deck's quite good, especially against the fair decks. And I know some people are getting really tired of me saying this, but in a lot of ways, you're kind of just a burn deck that gets to play Force of Will.
Mm-hmm.
And you, instead of playing Goblin Guide, you get to play effectively a Flying Wild Nacatl in Delver of Secrets. I've been tuning the deck for a while. My friend Dalton Osman, he and I have been testing it together and stuff for about a year now and play very similarly. And he is kind of one of the champions of this deck on the SCG tour. He's like, I think he has top eighted like 4 out of 7 classics he's entered with it or something.
Wow.
He just has pretty insane results. And he finally got me to try it out in Louisville. And I went 11-4 with it and have stuck with it ever since.
Oh, that's fantastic. How did you do in the challenge?
Well, I could have done better. I 4-3 was my final record. I decided to deposit one of my rounds in the garbage can by messing up when my opponent was effectively dead on board. But, you know, we're not going to do that again. Well, you know, not with this deck. But I'm sure I'll find a way to navigate my games into a trash can again.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. I decided to take Dredge. I haven't played Legacy Dredge since the last challenge. I don't really have any Legacy events to prepare for. So I played the same list that I played before with the Force of Wills on the sideboard, which I really enjoy. Kate Donnelly from Hipsters of the Coast, she was my co-pilot for much of the day. I had to mulligan a lot. And I know that people say that, but I was mulliganing so much that even chat was concerned. They were like, is this normal for you? And I was like, yeah, this is just a Tuesday. And so I'm going down to like 4. And so I had to mulligan quite a lot. I lost a very close game against Allure and all my opponents were very friendly. I really have to make it a habit to check my chat box because I used to automatically minimize the chat box and I was getting people wishing me good luck all day long. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a thing now. And so I'm getting used to responding and then chatting at me or with me during the game, which is something I never experienced before. I also went 4-3. I beat Burn twice, which felt fantastic. I lost to Miracles twice, which Miracles used to be a good matchup for me, and now it's not. I think I may have to go back to an older version of Dredge, because the version I'm playing right now is not very good, and Miracles has also started running Surgical Extraction, which isn't necessarily bad by itself, but Snapcaster and Surgical Extraction is really bad for me. So I definitely lost to Miracles twice. I felt pretty good against everything else that I faced. I faced a nice mix of decks. Everybody was really lovely. I finished 25th out of 75.
Nice.
So I got my play points back and I had a lot of fun. It's just so hard to play Legacy Dredge. I've also been playing Vintage Dredge. And when you've had a taste of Bazaar of Baghdad, Lion's Eye Diamond just feels so bad. And like, I've been really inspired to like, want to play more Legacy and get more involved with the community and with Dredge. But, you know, every time I want to do some innovation, I'm like, God, this would be better with Bazaar. And I'm just like, oh. And so I'm trying to get over that. But I definitely want to spend some more time playing Legacy if I can and innovating. So I feel like there's a lot of room here. And it's a lot of fun. I always look forward to the Legacy challenges and they're a really good time. So before we go, Katie, you also streamed.
I did. I navigated my way into a few trash cans.
I love that that's our new term. Instead of just wrapping it up in one little neat package of I punted, it's I deposited this game into the trash receptacle.
I did. Like, I wadded it up in my hands and I was like, here you go, trash can. I drafted with my friend Kobe from back home and we drafted black, green, bad stuff.
black, green, we ended bad up, stuff.
Yeah, that's what I called it. It was pretty mediocre. We first picked a snake and we had like some cool synergy, but a lot of the cards were just like mediocre and like slightly underwhelming for the rest of the draft. I went 1-2 and I definitely just like moto punted as per usual for me. And it's just a strange feeling when you know how to play Paper Magic well, and there's things that you would, like, never do in a game that you just know not to do. But on Modo, it's just, like, my fingers keep clicking, and I'm like, stop clicking, fingers. And they're like, no, we're just going to F6. We're going to F6. It's fine. And I'm like, stop that. So that's kind of how my games went. I clicked through some very important interactions, like saving all my creatures and things like that. So, but we can only get, you know, I always say we can only get better, but I think really today I got worse. So hopefully next time goes a little bit better, but it was a lot of fun overall.
I'm just happy whenever you stream. Like I hope that that's something that, you know, you're able to find time for, you know, once your schedule picks up a little bit. So I definitely think you're onto something and you should keep doing it.
Yes, I try my best. I feel like I'm just like scaring away my followers though, because I'm like, here's another punt, guys. And then, you know, it's probably like four people leaves and I'm like, okay, it's fine. We'll get them back if I just get a little bit better at not punting. Yeah, it's just a funny balance.
I don't know. I think if anything, it makes you human. Like, it makes you more endearing that you're not just some, you know, robot who's making all of the perfect plays and you know exactly what to do. Like, I think, you know, we talked about that earlier in the show about how, you know, we are sort of the minority here and that, you know, we're surrounded by really, really good players. But if the average person is watching this, you know, they're probably going to relate to you better than they can relate to somebody who's really, really good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I had a few people commiserating with me on Twitter about their moto punts and how I wasn't the only one. So that made me feel a little better. I'm not the only
one. Yeah, I think it's how you deal with it or how you recover from it that matters. Like, I think if you sort of die inside a little every time and people can see that, that might be less entertaining and, you know, less pleasing. But if you have a good attitude about it and you're like, fuck it, and you keep going, people are more likely to stick with you and watch.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So before we go, Emma, you wrote an article that came out today, actually, Modern Hate Cards for SCG Baltimore and Beyond. Tell us about this.
Well, I think the short version, the article is just kind of about hate cards and modern and their place in the format. And to summarize that as much as possible, I think hate cards are more important than modern than any other format, because the threats are so much more powerful than the answers. Mm-hmm. In Legacy, you have Force of Will. In, you know, Standard, you have real removal, or you have removal that is not so far outclassed by creatures that you can justify playing stuff like Fatal Push or Grasp of Darkness or whatever. Whereas in modern, if there are a lot of hands your affinity decks can have, where an Abzan deck can play a removal spell for its first four turns every turn and still just die. So having cards like Stony Silence or Blood Moon against the Valakut decks that, you know, removal doesn't do anything against and so on, it, I think, is incredibly important in the format.
Now, Modern gets a lot of flack for being a silver bullet format. You know, you talked about how, you know, the hate cards are so much more important in this format compared to something like Legacy or Standard. You know, do you view that as being a good thing about Modern? Like something that something that should stay the way that it is?
I think it's a great thing. I know a lot of people kind of just want to show up to and have the highest odds of winning any tournament they enter forever and always. But I think one of the cool things about Modern, and I didn't, you know, not to be a all listen to my mixtape fam or whatever, but I had an article about why I think Modern's great a couple months ago, where I basically just explained that I think Modern is the closest thing to capturing kitchen table magic for competitive players. Like, you're going to play against someone and their deck's going to do something and you're not necessarily going to be prepared for it, but they're not going to necessarily be prepared for you, and everyone's deck is kind of going to do what they want to do and you can do whatever you want, and that's awesome.
I have to say, though, that Modern did kind of ruin me when it comes to sideboarding. You know, I've been very open about the fact that I struggle with sideboarding in other formats, particularly Standard, because the sideboarding options are not so clear-cut. You know, when you're playing Modern, everything really is obvious, where it's like, okay, you're looking at Stony Silence, this comes in against Affinity, and you actually have this little, there's a couple of images that you've posted here, and so, you know, I'm mousing over them, and I can very clearly identify, almost like flashcards, what decks I would bring these in against, where it's like, okay, Fulminator, Tron, Grafdigger's Cage, Dredge, Besiege You, Counterspell, and so on and so forth. But when I look at a Standard sideboard and I'm like, okay, there's a Tireless Tracker, what do I bring that in for? Or like, you're looking and you're like, there's an Essence Extraction. What? It's just not as obvious to me as Modern. And so Modern has sort of ruined me in that regard, where I only know what to do when the cards are super obvious. I don't know what to do when a deck has four Fiery Impulse on the sideboard. I'm like, what is this for? I just don't know what to do.
Sure. I think that's a symptom of playing. You tend to play more linear decks in Modern, which don't have as many. You can't board as many cards in a Dredge deck or in an Adnaz deck as you would in, say, Jund or Abzan or Jeskai Control. You can't board out your Lotus Blooms. You have to keep your Adnazes. You have to keep your Angel's Graces and so on. Whereas in, and basically as a result of that, your sideboard cards, if you draw one sideboard card, because that's probably all you're going to draw, you have to know that one sideboard card is going to make a huge difference. So you tend to play more hosers in those kinds of decks, or more hate cards than you would in Jeskai Control, where you might see, like, you know, Electrolyze on the board, or is it Staticaster or something, where it's going to pick on little creature decks, but you don't necessarily know which ones.
Yeah, I think it also has to do with the fact that the decks in Standard don't necessarily fit in their neat little boxes anymore, where it's like, you know, before there was aggro, there was an aggro box, there was a control box, there was a mid-range box, and, you know, a lot of the modern decks tend to stay the same after sideboarding. Like, you know that Affinity is going to stay an aggro deck. They're not going to suddenly turn into a tokens deck or a control deck. You know that Tron is going to be Tron after sideboarding. Where I really struggle with Standard is I feel like the decks just don't fit in these boxes anymore, where, you know, I remember playing against a Esper tokens deck where it's like, okay, well, I have to board for Jace. I have to prepare for Jace, baby Jace. But I also have to have Virulent Plague for tokens, but I also need to deal with Kalidus. And so these decks are like aggro mid-range-ish. And it's like, it's a lot more difficult going back to R&D, because the decks as a whole are not so linear and you just don't know how to make those choices.
I think a lot of that is a symptom of there being more sets legal in Standard and great mana. It kind of tends to just lead to Standard decks being piles of rares and powerful cards,
yes,
rather than cohesive decks. Like, you don't see, what was called for a while, like the quote unquote dirty red decks or whatever, mm-hmm, where it was like, you know, 4 Goblin Guides, $20, and you're winning FNM. That's like, that was the way it worked for a while. And now, like, even Marty Vehicles, step one, you need 4 $30 Gideons, you need 4 $20 Heart of Kirin's, and so on, and you're already like $200 in the hole, and you haven't even hit your lands yet, and it's a 3-color deck, because mana's awesome, and why wouldn't you play all the best mythics in modern colors?
I just looked up Goblin Guide. Goblin Guide, you can't even get a Goblin Guide for $20 anymore. They are $33.
No. My God.
Hey, they're down. That's nice.
I know, right? Yeah. I was looking at somebody, we were talking about Lion's Eye Diamond the other day, and I looked him up, and they're down to $120.
Nice. Ooh,
I bet there's a sleeve playable.
I am not touching that.
never mind.
If you want to know more about our Lion's Eye Diamond discussion, feel free to follow us on Twitter. So Chris, you also being sort of the modern fan of the show, you know, what's your attitude towards hate cards and specifically the ones that you run? Like, how do you decide what to bring in?
I try to make sure that the hate cards I'm going to bring in are versatile, if possible, so I can hit a number of decks, so I'm not feeling like this one card is only good against this one deck. Like, I mean, I was just sitting around looking at my sideboard for Amulet Titan, and I'm like, okay, I know what this is for. It's like, okay, explosives, tokens, aggressive shit I don't want to deal with, pyroclasm, same. Crumble to Dust, guess I'm gonna go after Valakut and other decks that have lands that I don't like. So I feel like it is easier in Modern to be like, okay, this is what I would use this against. Ley Lines, I don't want to be targeted by shit, so that's not gonna happen. So, you know, it's a lot easier. I was very amused by Emma talking about the power level and hate cards aren't the best thing to just shove into a sideboard, and it's just a sideboard of Stony Silences, Rest in Peace, Ley Lines, Rule of Law, Defense Grid. And I'm like, who would ever back that? I'm like, that's the best thing ever. But
that is the meanest thing ever.
yeah. No fun ever for anyone.
They're only boarding for a couple decks, but look, they know what they're about, okay?
And Emma, white bordered defense grids?
Yeah.
I don't choose which defense grid. That's probably just the most recent printing of the card.
You're a big enough name. You should be able to be like, you know what? I want these specific cards.
Oh my gosh.
And well, you're welcome. Like,
look, you see, Star City only pays me the medium bucks.
When I do a podcast, I told Gathering Magic, I want my paragraphs to look like this. I want this many spaces. I got Anna Wintour on a bitch. I want this many spaces between my sentences. Yes.
Jeez, do you eat green Skittles?
No, I eat red dots and Diet Coke.
It's not a lie. I can attest to this.
Of course
it's not. I can attest to this.
She responded way too quick. She's like, oh my god, the contract thing again, okay.
My tour rider got leaked, damn it.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I definitely found Emma's article very useful in talking about fighting hate cards and just kind of breaking it down a little bit, so definitely as I'm going to be building sideboards in the future, I'm definitely going to be thinking about this a little more heavily, especially with decks that maybe I'm less familiar with piloting, to be like, okay, what do I really need to try to deal with what I'm going to deal with? And I think it also helps if you know, if you're tailoring your sideboard for your, you know, obviously your local meta versus like some big tournament, it's like, I like Jester Cap and motherfuckers, but I don't know if I'd bring it to like a GP. Maybe I would. Not sure.
Before we go, I want to get your opinion on something, Emma, because it wasn't clear to me how you felt about this. So I remember when you were visiting me and I was playing Ad Nauseam, and this is back when Infect was really popular, and there were some Ad Nauseam players that wouldn't even bother sideboarding because the matchup was so lopsided. We would have to bring in so many cards that it just felt almost easier to just say fuck it.
Against Infect, right?
Right. And so it was so bad for us that even if we were to sideboard, you're going to like a 20% matchup, 30% matchup. You know, this was back in March, I think, when I made that decision, March of last year. Mm-hmm. You know, do you still feel that way? Because again, the format is so diverse that you can't possibly cover everything. You know, do you feel like if you have a deck that has a glaring hole of a matchup, should you even try to prepare for it?
I think it depends. Everything's contextual. And if you think there's going to be, it depends how many times you're going to play against Infect, which is kind of a crapshoot in and of itself. But I think a lot of Modern is kind of going into the tournament, you built your deck a certain way to beat some decks, and if you don't play against those decks or you play against the wrong matches, you might just lose. You might just lose the tournament. It's not your fault, and that's how it goes, and you just need to be at peace with it. So if you want to be prepared for Infect, then board Darkness or whatever. But if you're okay going, hey, I'd rather work on my discard matchups or something, or I'd rather fix Jund, which is a much closer matchup in my opinion, then you should probably tweak that a bit more if that's what you want to do. It's like, you can't beat everything in Modern. I think you just kind of get to choose what you get to shore up, and you just have to understand you're going to lose to some things sometimes. Nobody's unbeatable, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I definitely ask myself that. And I also ask myself, what am I okay losing to? Like, that's how I describe Modern to a lot of people. Like, for people who are just getting into the format, I always say, ask yourself what you're okay losing to. Like, you know, I got to the point after a while where it's like, if I was going to lose to Infect, fine. It's Infect, whatever. But then there are matchups like Burn where it's like, I am not losing to this damn deck. And so I make sure that I have a Burn sideboard plan because I know that I personally feel bad when I lose to these matchups. And so, you know, I look at it from a very practical place of, you know, number one, what do I expect to face this weekend? But number two, what am I comfortable losing to? If I lose to Taking Turns, it's Taking Turns, whatever. I'm not going to make a sideboard plan for Taking Turns. And so, you know, you just have to ask yourself what you're okay losing to and then sort of tailor your sideboard for that too.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have something.
Yeah.
I'm going to be at GP Vancouver this weekend.
Yes.
Whoa. Lucky duck.
And I'm going to be doing coverage all by myself for the first time, which is going to be really fun. I'm basically going to be wandering around taking pictures and posting things on social media. So if you see me, come say hi. Also, it's Modern. So if you love Modern, please show up or at least, you know, come play inside events and come see me. And I'm really excited. It's really cool. I've been looking forward to seeing Wizards do more with social media as part of coverage, and it looks like that's the direction we're moving in right now, and I'm really excited to post all the awesome tweets that you guys post over the weekend. So yeah, it's gonna be really exciting.
Oh my god, I'm sure you're gonna slay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks.
So Chris and I are confirmed for SCG Indianapolis, so we will be there at the end of the month. Emma, you're going to be there too, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going there, and I'll be in Baltimore as well this weekend.
Super. So if you're at either one of those events, you should come say hi. And I also got my time off request approved for Vegas. So,
woo.
So are we all going to Vegas?
I'm going.
I'm looking at flights and stuff this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, Emma, are you going?
Probably not. I'm trying to move like a little bit after that, and that is not cheap.
Well, you know what we could do? We've talked about this before. So are you familiar with a flat Alex?
That is, I gotta be honest, that sounds like a sex thing.
Okay, it's flat Alex, right?
Yep.
It's flat Stanley.
Oh, flat Stanley.
Flat Stanley.
So Flat Stanley is a cardboard cutout so it was this thing where like kids would sign it and send it to their friends, and sort of Flat Stanley would get to go all over the world and experience things in lieu of the person who couldn't be there. And there was one event that Katie couldn't make it to, and so we had joked about making a Flat Katie and carrying that everywhere and having people sign it, and we never got around to doing that because we didn't have enough time to like get it together. But if Vegas is in 4 months and you can't be there, that's plenty of time to get a Flat Emma together, and we can have people sign it, and in like a cast, they'll sign it and put their well wishes on it for you, and then we'll send you Flat Emma, and you can see all the love from people who couldn't give you that love directly.
I mean, I am not going to stop anybody from doing that. it's not something I would have ever volunteered for, but
I promise it's not an effigy.
It's that, you know what, now that sounds like something that someone who was making an effigy would
say. No, it's completely loving. And like I said, it's a way to give people a way to send you wishes because you're not there.
It's like people who don't make effigies don't walk around convincing people they're not making effigies. You know?
But we would also take it everywhere too. So like we'd be at a draft and like we'd have it standing next to us and we'd pose as Flat Emma. And if we went out to eat, we'd get a table for like an extra person for Flat Emma. And it's just...
Jeez, Flat Me is going to... be everywhere.
Going, she's gonna have more excitement than you are.
Yeah, I know. That's isn't that the idea? She won't even blink. I'd blink if I were there. I'd close my eyes sometimes. I'm a lame-o.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to you, Emma, thank you so much for coming on the show, and please let people know where they can find you.
Okay, I am on Twitter and Twitch under the same handle. That's MTGEM_TEEGEE. And then I also write for Star City Games. My articles go up every Thursday right now, but things have been a little hectic with scheduling lately. So I've been posting 2 articles a week, but the second day has been kind of in flux for almost a month now. And I also have a public Facebook page. I believe it is just under Emma Handy, and the picture is just a custom token that was made for me by Inkland Customs. So feel free to look me up on any of those.
Great. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Emma. Like I said, we all love you so much, and it's been such a treat watching you take off, and we hope that you move on to bigger and better things.
Oh, y'all have always been really kind to me. I appreciate being here.
Absolutely. If anybody's enjoyed listening to the rest of us, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can also find me on Instagram and Snapchat, also at HalCanSan. And if you'd like to read my work this weekend, please take a look at Daily MTG and the at Magic Pro Tour Twitter account.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. I might start streaming some Overwatch in addition to Magic, yes, as my schedule frees up. So check that out there.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. My Snapchat is cryptic command with K's. And as we decided last week when we recorded, I have a rave stream. So it might pop up on Friday when this episode releases. So keep your eyes peeled, and you can find that twitch.tv/tokriz.
Katie, I have to say, if I know that you're playing Overwatch, I may just buy Overwatch to play with you.
Yes, do. It's so fun. I'm almost level 100.
I don't know what that means, but that sounds good.
Yeah, there's no way to, well. No.
What role are you?
Well, you get to switch every game. So you gotta get good at like a couple so you're not like completely incompetent like how I was for a long time.
You mean like I am right now? Cause I just like to play D.Va and charge in there and take hits and just.
Yeah, D.Va's super fun. Like, yeah, she's great to be good at.
Okay, so if you just heal me, I'll be your tank. It's fine.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll make it work, I promise.
Okay. Okay, great. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAstrus. That's OriginalAstrus. You can email me at OriginalAstrus@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/OriginalAstrus. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday evenings and sometimes on the weekends. You can find the show on Twitter at @GFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlFriendBracket@gmail.com. And we come out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.